Eitat. This. Eivam. Indeed. He. Certainly. Devaham. All the demigods. Gayanti. Chant. Aho. Oh. Amisham. Of these inhabitants of Bharata Varsha. Kim, what? Akari was done. Shovanam, highest beautiful activities. Prasanaha, pleased. Esham, upon them. Swit, or. Uta, it is said. Swayam, personally. Purihi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yahi, by whom? Janma, birth. Labdam, obtained. Rishu, in human society. Bharata Ajire, in the courtyard of Bharata Varsha. Mukunda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can offer liberation. Seva Paikam, which is the means of serving. Spriha, desire. He, certainly. No, he indeed, so. Na, our. Translation. Since the human form of life is the sublime position for spiritual realization, all the demigods in heaven speak in this way. How wonderful it is for these human beings to have been born in the land of Bharata Varsha. They must have executed pious acts of austerity in the past, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself must have been pleased with them. Otherwise, how could they engage in devotional service in so many ways? We demigods can only aspire to achieve human births in Bharata Varsha to execute devotional service. But these human beings are already engaged there. We repeat, since the human form of life is the sublime position for spiritual realization, all the demigods in heaven speak in this way. How wonderful it is. For these human beings who have been born in the land of Bharata Varsha, they must have executed pious acts of austerity in the past, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself must have been pleased with them. Otherwise, how could they engage in devotional service in so many ways? We demigods can only aspire to achieve human births in Bharata Varsha, to execute devotional service. But these human beings are already engaged there. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. These facts are further explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Adi Lila, 9th chapter, text 41. Bharata Bhumate Voila Manasya Janma Ja. Janma Sarataka Kuri Khoro Paro Upakar. When it was taken his birth as a human being in the land of India, Bharata Varsha, should make his life successful and work for the benefit of all other people. There are many facilities in India, Bharata Varsha, for executing devotional service. In Bharata Varsha, all the acharyas contributed their experience, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally appeared to teach the people of Bharata Varsha how to progress in spiritual life and be fixed in devotional service to the Lord. From all points of view, Bharata Varsha is the special land where one can very easily understand the process of devotional service and adopt it to make his life successful. If one makes his life successful in devotional service and then preaches devotional service in other parts of the world, people throughout the world will actually benefit. So, itadeva hideva dayanti. Aham isham kimakari shirvanam prasana isham. Svid uta swayam harihi. Yad janma labdam vishubhara tajide. Mukunda seva payitam spraha inaha. So, Om Ganatam Dandasya, Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuru Meritam Yena, Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So, we hear this expression many times that India is referred to as Bharatavarsha. Of course, originally, India, or talking about Bharatavarsha, actually encompassed practically the whole world. As we see, we go to different countries like Indonesia, and we see there's many performances of the Ramayana, and also their airline is Garuda Airlines. You go to Thailand, and every road is called Rama 1 or Rama 2, and the king is called Rama. And in so many places in the world, there's remnants of Vedic culture. Of course, you don't want to completely see everything as a remnant of Vedic culture. There was one devotee who wrote a book, and he said that Argentina is called Argentina because Arjuna went down there and populated the whole country, or something like that. I mean, you can really stretch your imagination and see all sorts of connections that may not be there. But in any case, Bharatavarsha was far larger than it is today, and the reason it's called Bharatavarsha is actually for two reasons. One is the Bharat Maharaj, who we've been reading about in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, appeared there. And Bharat Maharaj, the Bharat Maharaj we're referring to is the son of Lord Rishabhadev. And of course that's the famous story we've previously heard of Bharat Maharaj taking birth as a deer, and then Bharat Maharaj taking birth as Jatabharata, that means the Bharata who was like stone, who didn't speak, so he wouldn't fall into Maya. That's one way of not falling into Maya, Monavrata. Of course, it doesn't really work for us. And then the next birth, he actually went back to Godhead. So in any case, that's one reason why it's called Bharatavarsha. Another reason given is that it's named after the son of the king Dushyanta. This is a very interesting story in the Vedic literature because it involves this girl Shakuntala, who was raised by the vultures. Such an interesting story. Once upon a time, the story goes, there was this sage, Vishwamrita Muni, and he wanted to attain Brahminical status because he was envious of Vasishtha Muni. Now, that's actually not a good reason to want to become a Brahmin, because you're envious of someone. I mean, it's sort of like a contradiction. If you're envious, then really that's not a Brahminical quality. Although, if you do have some other motivation, sometimes it can lead you to a higher platform. Like Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, akama sava kama moksha kama. Whether one is free of material desires, full of material desires, or desirous of liberation, one should worship Krishna. So sometimes you can have one motivation and then it becomes transformed into something different. And of course, in the Gita, Krishna also mentions that people have basically four different types of material motivations when they come to Krishna consciousness. Chaturvidha vajanti mam. You know, they want wealth, or they're inquisitive, or they want knowledge, or they're in distress. So things get transformed. But in any case, getting back to the story, this Vishwamitra Muni, he wanted to become more powerful than Vasishtha and defeat Vasishtha. There was a fight between both of them. And he was executing austerities, meditating, and then the demigods got a little upset with him. And they sent this apsara. Her name was Menaka. And the problem with executing austerities without having a higher taste in devotional service is that, first of all, you become very dry, and secondly, the material desires are still there. They haven't been fried or finished. They're just in a dormant state. It's like when you're sleeping, it appears that you're very peaceful and brahminical. Or at least in the modern ignorance. But anyway, it appears like, wow, what a peaceful person, sleeping like a baby. I'm sure Hiranyakashipu and Ranyaksha, they slept very soundly at night, except when they were being challenged by the Lord. But in any case, and they appeared very peaceful. Ravana, very, very peaceful. There's a story of Hanuman. And Hanuman was going around looking for Sita Devi. He was flying around in a little form. And he saw Ravan lying on the bed, and Ravan was just sleeping peacefully like a baby, because he was snoring too. And that's because he was under the influence of some form of intoxication. So the desires are dormant in the heart. And sometimes desires are compared to seeds. The seeds can become dormant for a long period of time. Prabhupada gives the example, the chickpeas or garbanzo beans were dormant in the tombs of the pharaohs for many, many years. And when the pharaoh's tombs were finally opened and they added some water to the chickpeas, then they had chickpea sprouts, which are very healthy. And in that case, very old, too. So that's like the desire. So Vishwamitra Muni, he was meditating. He still had the desires in his heart. He didn't perform devotional service at that time, so he really didn't fry the seed, because that's the only way to keep the seed from fructifying. And so this Menaka, she was sent from the heavenly planets, and very beautiful girl. And she started to ring her ankle bells, like we have Arti ringing the bell. So I remember in the early days of the movement that the Brahmacharinis would always wear ankle bells, at least the temples I was in. And the question was, you know, why are they wearing the ankle bells? And the Brahmacharis would get very upset, thinking, you know, this is agitating our mind, you know, hearing the ankle bells of the women. And then I had a good explanation. I said, no, this is actually very good, this, because then you get a warning when they're coming. You know, it's like the cow wearing the bell. Anyway, so. In any case, you find so many stories of ladies wearing ankle bells. Old ladies here should put on ankle bells. No, not really. Right. Anyway, so he fell in love. Basically, to make a long story short, Vishwamitra Muni gave up his austerities, fell in love, and had a relationship with Menaka, and the result, this girl was born, little girl baby. And the mother was actually a little heartless. She just left the girl in the forest too. That's very unusual, isn't it? Because we're talking about how a mother's love is actually the closest thing to pure love in this world. So, not a stepmother's love, a mother's love. And not a, what is that word in Spanish? What was that word you mentioned, Vrindavan, last night? Mother-in-law. Suegra. It's not a suegra's love either. So this Menaka left her little daughter there, and the child was being taken care of by the vultures. Somehow or other, the vultures protected. I mean, this is how pious India is, that even the birds, they protect human beings in India. There was an interesting story. One of my godbrothers, he was chanting japa at Govardhan, and he was chanting peacefully, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And hear the birds, you know, screaming and yelling and creating a noise, a havoc. It's like, what are these birds doing? What are these birds doing? And then eventually he got up and walked away because it was just too loud with all the birds. But then he discovered, then the birds were real quiet, and he looked, and the birds were actually keeping a cobra from attacking him. Interesting story, isn't it? There's a Govardhan and there's these cobras, you know, snakes. Cobra is a snake. And the cobra was just like in his hole. The birds were actually surrounding the hole in the tree. No, birds don't go like that. Chirp, chirp, chirp. However they were going. So you see, India is so pious that sometimes you even find the birds, they're protecting saintly persons. So this is what it's a true story. And the devotees told me about this story, and I know the person who had that encounter with the birds and the snake. I believe it was Burjan, if I remember correctly. So this baby was left with the vulture, therefore she was called Shakuntala. She was a vulture girl, but she was protected by the vultures. And eventually this sage, Kanva Muni, adopted her. Because it's so, you know, obviously you see this poor little baby in the forest, you're not going to just say, you know, Hare Krishna. You want to take care of her, that's proper. So he took care of her, and he raised her as his daughter, and then as she grew up, of course she became very beautiful because she was the daughter of Menaka and Viswamrita Muni. She became very beautiful, and then what happened? Oh, this king, Dushyanta, he came, you know, doing his hunting business, as kings usually do, and he discovered her, and her father, or stepfather, foster father, not stepfather, foster father, Kanva Muni was not there, and he just fell in love with her. And he said, let's get married. And they had a Gandharva marriage. Gandharva marriage means when you exchange garlands. And he said, I'll call for you later. I'm going back to my kingdom. Here's a ring. This is an interesting story, actually. Here's a ring, and this signifies that we're married. So what happened is that he went back to his kingdom. Kanva Muni came back. He understood everything, and you know, he understood it was the Lord's plan. And she basically, after some time, had a baby, and the baby was called Bharata. And that's another reason Bharata Maharaj, or Bharata Varsha is called Bharata Varsha. So then, to continue with this story, is that she thought, oh, now it's time to see my husband. So she went back, she went to the kingdom, and she was wearing this ring, and as she was going to the kingdom, she had to cross a river, and she put her hand into the river. Let's go back a little bit in the story. Before she decided to see the king with her baby, she didn't properly honor a sage. Yeah, that's the story. Because she was so much in love with Dushyanta, her husband, she was just thinking of him day and night. So the sage wasn't properly honored. She didn't even see the sage. She was so much in love that the sage cursed her that the king would actually forget that she was married to him. So she was cursed like that. And the only way he would remember is if he saw the ring. Okay. This is an interesting story. This is how the story goes. So, she was on the way to see the king, and she was dangling her hand in the river, and guess what happened? The ring fell off. And the ring fell into the mouth of a fish. You heard the story before? The ring fell into the mouth of a fish. Okay. And so she arrived in Dushyanta's kingdom, and she said to him, you know, here I am, here's your wife, and here's your baby. And because of the curse, he said, who are you? You know, this lady, she just wants to take advantage and get some money or whatever. And he said, you know, get out of here. You're not my wife. And so in this way, she was completely depressed because the king didn't recognize her. Eventually, to make a long story short, there was a fisherman who caught the fish. And when he caught the fish, he opened up the fish because he was getting ready to make some fish cutlets or whatever they make with fish. And he discovered the ring, and then saw that the ring was the king's ring, and he went to the king. And first of all, they thought the fisherman was a thief because they thought he had stolen the ring. But then as soon as the king put the ring on his finger, then he realized that this Shakuntala was his wife, and then he accepted her. Okay? So it's a happy story. Happy ending to the story, even though there's so much trauma in the meantime. So that's another reason India is called Varsha. Now, about India itself, or at least extended India, is that practically all the rivers in India and all the places in India are holy. There's some pastime connected with practically every place you go. For example, I just went to this hill station. In India, they have these things called hill stations. Hill station means like places that people go during the summer, because it's extremely hot during the summer, and the kings that would build their palaces on the, you know, high in the mountains or in the hills, because it's cooler when you go up 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 feet. It's quite cool. And the summers in India are quite intense. I mean, they can be like normally 120, 130 degrees Fahrenheit, or even more, 140 degrees Fahrenheit, or if you go into centigrade, it can be up to 50 degrees centigrade in India. And I've experienced it. It's pretty intense. And when I was at Govardhan one year, it was 45 degrees. And, you know, I did away with my bed and everything. I slept on concrete at night, because that's the only way you could stay cool. You understand? You sleep on a concrete floor. So, anyway, so we went to this, recently we had a GBC retreat. We were retreating from our management. So anyway, because it was the idea that we should all get together and be people. You know, be relate to each other as, you know, just voting, rather than, you know, voting for different things, which is a good idea. And so Mahabaleshwar we went to. So we went all the way up this mountain, the taxi, you know, in India, the roads are not so, let's say, protected. You don't really have guardrails in most of the roads. So when you're going up in the mountains, if you make one wrong move, you're history. So it's very dangerous. So going up these windy. And finally we get to the top of the mountain where there's this beautiful retreat with a swimming pool and everything like that. Modern Western style retreat. And wasn't air, not air conditioning. Yeah, it was air conditioning. I mean, just right. And so I was thinking, well, it's just like being in America. But then we looked out from there and there was a temple. And I said, well, you know, what's that temple? And he said, wow, we were at the mouth of the Krishna River. So even you go to have a vacation somewhere, the point I'm making is even you go to have a vacation somewhere and enjoy life. Of course, it was based on Krishna's katha. Actually, at the retreat, we were always chanting and sharing realizations and everything. It wasn't simply that we went there and played cricket or did some mundane thing with each other. But, you know, we were sharing realizations, reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. I was reading some things that inspired me, chanting. But it was a little hard to breathe in the mountains because it's, I think it was about like 5,000 or 8,000 feet up, so it was hard to breathe. So anyway, so we saw this temple, and they said, that's the source of the Krishna River, one of the great holy rivers. So we went to the source, went to the temple, and lo and behold, there was a beautiful temple that was thousands of years old. And then you see these things are thousands of years old. But unfortunately, there's not a system, a governmental system, of protecting the heritage sites in India. Because the government in many places, actually most places in India, is extremely corrupt. So the business interests actually went out. For example, the Jamuna River has been stopped completely, and whatever you see in the Jamuna riverbed in Vrindavan is Delhi sewerage, runoff, industrial waste. There's not a drop of Jamuna water because of industrial interests. And we're speaking about companies, multinational companies like Coca-Cola and other companies that actually take all the water to produce soft beverages for everybody so that people can get cancer drinking now. Isn't that, you get killed on both ends. First of all, they take away the fresh water from you, the spiritual water, and then they kill you with soft drinks. It's actually a fact that soft drinks are one of the major causes of cancer and diabetes in the world. Soft drinks and potato chips, but we won't talk about that in class. So, if you're interested, you can ask me later. So then we went there, and there's this beautiful temple, thousands of years old. And this temple was built by Bhimsen. Bhimsen. And one night. I mean, gigantic stones, all of which fit together. I mean, you could see it was very, very old. And it was in the top of the mountain, so obviously no bulldozers or big machines had come to take these big stones up the hill. These giant stones, which basically no one could lift, and they were placed so well, against each other, you couldn't even put like a hair or anything between the stones. They were just perfectly made, and then they had made a beautiful temple to Lord Shiva up there. And there were carvings of Nandi, Lord Shiva's bull. And those carvings, the water of the Krishna River was coming out. You understand? The beginning of the Krishna River and going down the hill. Like that from there. And then as we looked down the hill, there was the actual river itself, which is being fed by the source of the river and flowing throughout the rest of India. So, I mean, that was just one experience we've had in India, how practically every place is a holy place in India. And so many incarnations exhibited their pastimes. I mean, of course, you have Lord Ram and Ayodhya and throughout the rest of India. And then you have Krishna, Mathura, Vrindavan, Dwarka, and Lord Narsingadev, you have Aholam, you have Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you have the Acharyas. In South India, there's the Pancha Dravida. Pancha Dravida means the five southern provinces of India in which many Acharyas appeared. So it's simply a wonderful, place that reminds you of Krishna, reminds you of spirituality wherever you go. So, one actually has to be a human being to appreciate that. Now, what do I mean? Because here it talks about human beings. So what is actually a human being? A human being isn't simply one who has a human body. And even amongst those who have human bodies, there's many species that are actually not capable of understanding spirituality. Like we know there's 400,000 species of human beings. And then, of course, in the Gita, Krishna says that four types of people can't approach, and one is Naradama, lowest of people, lowest of human beings, lowest of mankind. So, one has to have the capacity, just like if you look at, study some anthropology, there's different human species, and some of them just don't have the brains, like Neanderthals. Of course, they attribute this difference in human species to be due to evolution. We don't accept the theory of evolution because the fully formed modern human being, who they consider the modern human being, was present millions of years ago. And anthropologists have actually found evidence of that, although that's not accepted by the so-called modern scholars because they have this thing called the knowledge filter, where any sort of information that comes out that contradicts their theories, their dear theories, is rejected. And not only that, the people who come out with that information, they're rejected from the scientific field. There's actually one interesting film. I think the name of the film was No Intelligence Allowed, that showed how people who didn't accept the theory of evolution based upon their own scientific understanding, not upon some Krishna conscious fanatical religious beliefs, but upon their own scientific findings. If they didn't accept the scientific theories, they were actually excluded, or extruded, that's a better word. They're excluded from the scientific field. In fact, they couldn't find a job again. It actually, the name of the movie is Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. And I highly recommend that movie for people. So, anyway, so as far as human beings are concerned, one actually has to be a real human being. It's not only the species amongst the human beings, but it's the understanding, as Lord Rishabhadev states, Nayam deho bhajam ri loke kashtam kamam arite vidbhujamye. Tapo divyam putraka yena shatvam shudyad yashmad brahma shoka chvanantam. And he gives this instruction to his sons, headed up by Bard Maharaj again. He says, if you want to be a human being, I'm paraphrasing it, not exact translation, then you can't really just imitate the stool eaters, the pigs, who are simply engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, defending. You have to engage in a search for the absolute truth, the po divyam, you know, some austerity, some endeavor for a transcendental realization. This is really what makes a human being, someone who does this. So that's the fortunate position. If one is actually acting like a human being in the land of Bharata-varsha, then one is in a very fortunate situation and can make perfection of his life. So what about those, final point I want to make is, what about those who are not in the land of Bharata-varsha? We're not actually, in one sense we are, in another sense we're not in the land of Bharata-varsha. We can take shelter of transcendental sound. I had that realization yesterday, because I recently, I just want to share this with all of you before the end of class, very little time, is that, you know, I just spent some time in India. But yesterday I actually experienced more realization than I had experienced in my whole time in India, you know, spiritual realization, because as I was taking a walk to Hillsborough, which is not in the land of, technically in the land of Bharata-varsha, I was listening to a class of Prabhupada. And as I was listening to a class of Prabhupada, I heard some things that were really getting me a lot of realization. And one of the things was, Krishna's in your heart. Now, we've heard that many, many times before, but hearing it from Prabhupada, someone who is coming down from the spiritual platform, full faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then somehow or other I got realization. I said, hey, I'm not alone. You know, this is, you know, you hear this millions of times and finally it strikes you. You know, it takes like 200 years in the Hare Krishna movement to realize that Krishna's in your heart. So I said, oh, I'm not alone. Not referring to aliens from outer space, we're not alone. But we're not alone because Krishna's in our heart. He's always with us. Amazing. Anyway, so the point being, if we take shelter of transcendental sound, wherever we are, even if we're not in the land or technically